Welcome to tonight's Saturday Night Special, episode 103.
I'm Chris Mamula. I challenge you to invest in yourself, invest in others, develop your influence, and impact the world by using your time, your talent, and your treasures to live out your calling. Having the ability to take control of your money is key, and one way to be inspired to do that is to listen to this, the Inspired Stewardship Podcast with my friend Scott Mader. We mentioned like how people get so focused on retirement. And so we did reach our goal, and I retired. I left my career as a physical therapist. I haven't worked since, it's been about 3.5 years now as a therapist. But I think a lot of people think that this is magically going to be the answer to your problems. And what I like to encourage people to do is just look at the trade-offs. Like, what are the positive things that come from work?
Welcome, and thank you for joining us on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. If you truly desire to become the person who God wants you to be, then you must learn to use your time, your talent, and your treasures for your true calling. In the Inspired Stewardship Podcast, you will learn to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence so that you can impact the world. In tonight's Saturday Night Special, I interview Chris Mamula. I asked Chris to share his journey to financial independence and how he did it without having to win the lottery or have a massive, successful startup. I also asked Chris to share why financial independence and early retirement are really misunderstood by many people and what they mean instead. Chris also talks with you about the benefits and challenges that come with focusing on financial independence. One area that a lot of folks need some help with is around the area of productivity. Getting not just more things done, but actually getting the right things done can be really tough. I've got a course called Productivity for Your Passion that's designed to help you do this and then to hold you accountable and walk with you so that you can tailor productivity not just to be getting more done, but actually getting the right things done. What's more, we take the approach of looking at your personality and how you actually look at things in the world and tailor the productivity system to your personality. Because the truth is, a lot of the systems that are out there are written really well for somebody with a particular personality type, but if you have a different approach to things, they just don't work. But there's tools and techniques and approaches that you can take that will work for anyone, and we help you do that in Productivity for Your Passion. Check it out over at inspiredstewardship.com/launch. Chris Mamula used principles of traditional retirement planning combined with creative lifestyle design to retire from a career as a physical therapist at the age of 41. After poor experiences with the financial industry early in his professional life, he educated himself on investing and tax planning. Now he draws on his experience to write about wealth building, DIY investing, financial planning, early retirement, and lifestyle design at Can I Retire Yet? Chris has been featured on MarketWatch, Morningstar, U.S. News & World Report, and Business Insider. He is also the primary author of the book Choose FI, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
It is great to have you here. So this is one of those topics that I've touched on before on the podcast, and it's talked about a lot around this idea of financial independence, retiring early, and it's obviously something that you hear about a lot. But can you take us through a little bit of your personal journey to how you actually reached financial independence and how it came about for you?
Yeah, my story, I was a physical therapist and I left my career. I early retired at 41 years of age, quote unquote, like overnight success story that took about 25 years to in the making. My wife and I, we were both first generation college graduates, and we both came from pretty modest backgrounds, and we didn't certainly have any grand plan that we were going to save in a certain way and invest in a certain way and retire when we were 40. I would have kind of thought that was absurd if you would have told me that was even possible back in 2001 when I was getting out of grad school and we were starting. But for myself, my mom and dad, my mom especially, she was really good with stretching a dollar. And she taught me how to be frugal and how to, live a good life without needing to spend a lot, because that was really our only option. And for my, and she was very anti-debt. And then for my wife, she had a very different experience, very similar income for their household, but she had three brothers and sisters and just their family struggled with money. And it was a pain point for her. And so she was also very motivated to do better for different reasons, though. Mm-hmm. And so when we were going to get married, she had to put herself through school completely. And she also, she was working full-time while going to school. So she had a small car loan and she didn't have a lot of debt. And I knew why she had debt. Like I knew she was responsible, but it still freaked me out. Cause like I said, my mom like was so anti-debt and that was just our household thing. And so it scared me going into a marriage with any debt. So we talked and we agreed that in that year leading up to when we were going to get married, when I was finishing grad school and she was starting to work, that she would basically support us. We would live off of her income. And then I was also working part-time and anything I was making, I was just paying everything towards getting her out of debt. And then my first paycheck or two, I continued to do that of my real job when I became a physical therapist. And we were debt-free about a month before we got married. And we were still living that college lifestyle and we'd ever inflated it. And so we just decided, let's keep doing this. And so we kept living off of her salary and we started saving my income for a down payment on a house. And then over time, we just continued that really for, like I said, 15, 16 years of living off of one salary and using the other one either to pay off our house quickly or to buy investments. So always, instead of spending that second income, putting it towards appreciating assets. And 15 years later, we were financially independent and in a position to change our life drastically.
So a couple of things I want to call out there. Do you mind sharing? Was either one of you a doctor, lawyer kind of salary? Or was it, what was the kind of money, quote unquote, that y'all were making during that time? What did it average? Do you mind sharing
that? I think that's a great question. So we started, my wife had a bachelor's degree in math. So she had a very entry-level job at an actuarial firm. She was making about mid-30s. And I was coming out as a physical therapist. And for a physical therapist, I actually have a very low salary because we were in the Pittsburgh area. And Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, they have three physical therapy schools right in Pittsburgh. And then we also have the UPMC medical system, which kind of is this big behemoth, and they were driving down salaries. So we were both starting like in the mid-30, low 40 range. And then over the course of our career, we each about doubled our salaries. So we both maxed out at about $80,000 to maybe $90,000-ish. So we both grew our salaries for sure. And having a dual income household helped. So we had an above average household income, but yeah, definitely not a physician salary. And neither of us ever cracked six figures by any means.
And that's kind of what I wanted people to hear. Because I think a lot of times, and you do hear them, there's stories of the person that founded a startup and then they sell it for $13 million and now they're financially independent. It's like, well, duh. Of course they are. To hear it from somebody that's making a quote average income, $90,000 is above average. But again, that wasn't what you started at. That's what you ended at in the arc. And I think it's fair that most people don't continue to make $30,000 their entire life. Most people, it goes up. So that's fair.
Yeah. And that's why I really started sharing my story is, again, if I would have heard people, I never saw anybody doing anything like what we ended up doing and I write about now. And so to me, it was just like, and you see these stories of it's either the startup founder who cashes out and makes $5 million or more on an exit, or you have these people like the extreme frugality. People are like recycling sandwich bags. And, I'm a hippie kind of outdoors, like environmentalist person. So if you want to recycle for the sake of recycling, that's great. But you'd have to save a lot of sandwich bags to be able to retire at 40. I want to present a realistic view of how you can actually do this that helps normal people working normal jobs and show that this is feasible. And,
let's dive into that a little bit, because I do think when people hear, quote, FIRE, which is financial independence, retire early. Personally, I don't like that we always cram those together, but we can talk about that later. Because I'm like, I don't want to retire. I love what I do. So I'm okay with just financial independence part. But people get these ideas about what that means. And we just talked about a few of them. Oh, they must have sold a business or done something like that. Or that only works for people that have a really high income. Or this doesn't work for, quote, normal people. You've got to be, quote, live in a cave and only come out on triple coupon Tuesdays. And other than that, nobody can live a normal life and do that. So what is different from what, that picture that people have and what you're trying to show people to do?
Yeah. So what I really like to focus on are the big things, getting the big decisions. And so what are those things? I think that basically, and so I wrote a book about like how you do this quickly. And there's really three levers you can pull. You can spend less, you can earn more and you can invest better. And so on the spending side, I mean, you hear so much about the latte factor, like cutting out your latte or stuff like that. And it can be like, if you're really struggling to from paycheck to paycheck, any little thing you can do, it matters. I'm not discounting that completely. But if you want to really build wealth, you have to get the big things. So the big things are housing. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned like when we came out, like the first thing we did is we saved for a big down payment on a house. And we really wanted to have a house that if anything happened, if we had a child and one of us wanted to stop working, if one of us became sick or disabled, if one of us passed away, if we split up, if anything happened, we could live off of one. And we built our lifestyle on that. So most people, you go to a realtor, they say you need to get pre-approved. They tell you how much house you can afford. And then magically you go to the top of that price range with the realtor. And there's so many incentives from the people lending you money and the people selling the house for that to happen. But we just thought differently. And we thought, grew up again, we had fairly humble beginnings. And we started looking at these houses. We want to live this way and be strapped paycheck to paycheck for the rest of our life. And we didn't. So housing is
plus coming along with that bigger house is bigger upkeep, bigger maintenance, bigger
property taxes. Yeah. Just that pressure to keep up with the Joneses next door and all that stuff. So housing is one. The second biggest expense for most people is cars. And again, like I know coming out of grad school, and this isn't a judgment thing, like whatever, if you love cars, and that's what you want to do, then by all means do it. But for us, we're not car people. So like, I know my college roommate, like the first thing he did, I remember him showing up at my house and he had this brand new pickup and he was so proud of it. And then the one girl who I was good friends with, she came with her Audi and she was so proud of it. And like, I just kept driving. I had this car that my grandmother, she had lung cancer and died like in my parents' house. And she cleaned houses for a living. And she had this old beat up, I can't remember the model, Chevy. And that's what I drove in grad school to get to my clinicals. And that's what I kept driving for the first couple of years. And that was our choice. And that's always been our mantra. Like we just drove these older used cars. And a car for us is a thing to get you from point A to point B and nothing more, not a status symbol. So housing and cars are really the two big things that are going to drive most household spending. And we really optimize those. Again, not because we had this master plan. It just made sense to us. That's the way we grew up. And then once you start doing that, income taxes, especially as we mentioned, our income went up. As you're a higher earning professional, like we are in that $80,000 to $90,000 range, the tax code is very unfriendly the more you earn. And so we focused on how do we control our income taxes through just using simple retirement accounts, a simple investing strategy where you're not paying a lot of capital gains. So that's a big thing. And then we took control of our investments. So as you start to build your investments, investment fees matter and they matter a lot. And so we took control of those and cut those out. And we manage our own investments. And those couple of things, those big things that most people, I think, just go with the crowd and don't think about, that was really how we did it on the spending side to spend less. And that made a huge difference and allowed us to get to where we are.
Mm-hmm. Did y'all do anything intentionally on the earning and investing side as well?
Yeah. So I think on the earning side, we just really focused on a more traditional, I know it's out of style to say you should go to college and stuff, but we really focused on our education and learning. And so I mentioned I was a physical therapist, so I got a bachelor's and a master's degree. And then I ended up going back to school and getting a transitional doctorate of physical therapy. And then my wife also has 3 degrees. She has a bachelor's in math, she has an MBA, and she has a master's in operations research. And but what we did differently, I don't think it's wise to just go get a college degree at any cost. So for me, I worked through undergrad and grad school. My parents were able to help me because they saved diligently. I looked for scholarships. I got a large scholarship for grad school that paid probably over half of my master's degree. For my wife, she worked full-time while going to school full-time for her undergrad. And then for both of her master's and my doctorate degree, our employers paid probably 90% of that. We just leveraged employer benefits. So we were always constantly looking to learn. And it doesn't have to be formal education. You asked about investing. And I really took a deep dive on investing. And that's what got me started writing about it after we had some bad experience with using a financial advisor initially. And so I started writing about that. And not only did I learn about investing, but I started learning about blogging and writing. And so I think we just have this mindset of being lifelong learners and developing skills that are going to pay.
And again, the part I want to call out about that is you're not really asking anyone to do anything that is extreme or dramatic. And like you said, y'all use fairly traditional investment vehicles. You took control of them, but you didn't go do some fancy options trading, you know, crypto, whatever. And again, it's not that those things are bad. It's just that's not the route you took. Y'all took a more, quote, traditional and safe route. Why did y'all pick that kind of strategy as opposed to doing something like starting your own business or something else that could have been? Because again, people do successfully do this with those routes too. So it's not like there's one size fits all.
Yeah, I think, again, we didn't have a master plan. So we both of our parents kind of emphasized education. And I know particularly for my parents, I was like, neither of my parents, they just weren't able to go to college. They didn't have the means to do that. And they really wanted that better path for me. So that was emphasized forever that you're going to get an education.
And I'm sure you will go to college, not,
you know. Yeah, I'm sure if I was a horrible student, they probably would have bent on that, but I excelled academics from a young age. And so that was something that came naturally to me. So that was just the path before me. And, but they, again, like what they emphasized is like my parents saved as much as they possibly could with the means that they had. And what they did is they said, this is what you have. We really want you to go to college, but this is what we can do to help you. And then, so anything you have left over, you can keep it. And if you can't make it, then you're going to have to take loans on your own. And we're not signing or going in any debt for this. And so that was, I guess that they set me down that path. And honestly, there wasn't a lot of thought on my part. It was just what you do. And I think for my wife, it was probably pretty similar.
So once you turn that corner and you begin to reach financial independence, let's paint a picture of that for folks, because obviously you did a lot of things different. You drove an old car, you bought a smaller house, you did other things different. So what is the drive behind it? What are some of the benefits that come along with financial independence?
Yeah, for me, again, like I was a physical therapist. It wasn't a horrible job by any means. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania. I wasn't in the steel mill in 110 degree weather with chance of being dismembered. I wasn't underground digging coal like a lot of people in my community. So I don't want to come across as like somebody that's whiny, like, oh, job was so hard. Life was so hard. Like I was well paid and I had a relatively rewarding and easy job, but it was just boring. Like I was doing the same thing over and over. And our healthcare system is just so much bureaucracy. And it just seemed like the paperwork just got worse and worse. And I just didn't see a way to develop that time freedom that I desired. So for me, I think the biggest desire was time freedom. My wife and I got into outdoors. We rock climb, we ski, we've gotten into mountaineering. And I just wanted more time to do those things while I was young and healthy. And so our initial path, we embraced that outdoor community where you hear the terms like ski bums, or in the climbing community, they call them dirt bags. And we just wanted that lifestyle where people do that and they pursue their passions. But by the same token, those same people, we've seen people, you're skiing and you tear your ACL, you're climbing. And I had a friend who had a bad fall and had a fracture in his neck, and they have no life insurance or no health insurance. And they're set up for disaster, or even something as simple as a car breaking down. It's so stressful. And we grew up not having a lot of money and we knew we didn't want that. So we were just looking for a way to pursue our passions, but have some financial security that we didn't see. And then we didn't really get serious. What got us serious was we didn't think my wife was able to have children. And so in 2012, we were probably a decade on our path and we found out she was pregnant and surprised. So we could have kids. And that made me get really serious. So that's when I started learning about investing and tax planning and retirement planning and really getting into the technical aspects that prior to that, I thought was inaccessible to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think kids can change it.
They changed me overnight. That was many panic attacks that first month or two after.
Now I have to be an adult. What happened? There's a little person that's going to be depending on me.
Yeah, I remember the first time we saw that ultrasound with a heartbeat, and I was like, this is real. And that changed everything that day.
My wife and I had a very similar experience where we didn't think we were going to be able to get pregnant. We'd actually had several miscarriages and had given up on the idea. And yeah, I just had a son graduate high school. And so we looked up and went, oh, okay. Wow. What do you know? It did happen. And very much the same experience of that caused us to reevaluate and get serious about some things that maybe we were not taking so serious before. So I think that's not an uncommon feeling.
No, I think it's very common. I think the one advantage, we had a lot of the habits of saving and doing things. We had that established. So we weren't starting from, when I say like in 2012, like we already had a decade of saving. We had to redo a lot of things because our strategies were pretty poor. But at least we had a lot of the fundamentals and the foundation.
And you still had you weren't starting from zero. You were or worse yet, negative net worth, which a lot of people are starting from.
That would be a tough situation. So we were very fortunate there.
So let's talk now. Let's flip it on its head. So we're painting this picture of the time freedom and other things that are good reasons why. What are some of the challenges or difficulties or things that come along with financial independence that maybe people don't expect or don't think about?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I'm going to give you a couple of common things that I hear like from readers and I hear people talking about that honestly weren't our experience. But I think a lot of people, it's just hard to start because it's like this goal that you think about retirement. And particularly, so when we talk about FIRE, what people typically use as a benchmark to start with is what's called the 4% rule, meaning you can take 4% of your assets on the year to start retirement. So let's say you spend $40,000 a year, you would need $1 million to start because you have to multiply that by 25 to get the inverse. And wow, that seems overwhelming if you're starting from scratch. Again, we didn't have a goal. So we were just saving because it felt good and we didn't know what we were doing. So that wasn't really a problem for us. Another problem that I think a lot of people have is one spouse will find this. Maybe like somebody is listening to this today and you think we could do this. And then you go to your husband or wife and they're like, you're crazy. Like, we're not going to save half of our income. So to get that other partner on board. And again, for us, it was very different reasons. For me, I didn't want to have debt because that was pounded into me. And also not having a lot of money. I always wanted a more adventuresome lifestyle. Like I like to travel. We did a little bit of that when I was very young. And then my dad changed his career and we weren't able to do that. And I just didn't want to feel trapped. For my wife, it was secure. But so for very different reasons, but we both love saving. So for us, that wasn't a problem. But for a lot of people, that is getting your partner on board. And then I think the third really big challenge that I see over and over is people will find this message and they see, okay, we got to just get our expenses low and save everything and then we can retire. And they get so focused on the goal, they make themselves pretty miserable and they start depriving themselves and they start putting things off. I'll do this when I'm financially independent. I'll do this when I'm retired. And it really doesn't work that way. Like you don't change who you are overnight because you hit some magic number on a computer screen or on a paper. So you have to develop those patterns and those habits and find happiness on the way and figure out what you want to do and work that into your lifestyle versus thinking that I can do this and then it's going to magically change when I retire. So I think those are common ones. And again, those aren't really ones that I face. I face different challenges and I can go into those like personally, if you'd like.
Sure. What were some of the challenges y'all faced?
Yeah. So for me, for one thing, like you said, you don't ever want to retire. And I would agree with you now. Like but I did want to retire. So the blog I write now is called Can I Retire Yet? And when I found it was started by somebody else and I literally found it because I was like, I need to get out of this career. Like I'm burning out. Like I need more time. And now I have this kid coming and I wanted to retire. And I a little bit fell into that idea of things will be better when. And so then you hit financial independence. And I left my job and you have to look in the mirror and like, okay, why am I not doing these things I said I was going to do? So one of the things for me is like, we always were, and I love your kind of theme of stewardship. We always were very into giving along the way. Like as much as we were saving, we still gave of our money, but I really never gave of my time. I was very selfish with my time. And I was like, I don't have time to do this. I barely have time for my own self. And when I retire, I'm going to do this. And I look back at the end of my first year and I think I volunteered 6 hours and I was like, where did that year go? And it's again, like you're not going to magically change. Another thing, like I mentioned, like we were into the outdoor stuff. I got better at a lot of these sports, but rock climbing, I love climbing, but I always just kind of sucked at it. And it was hard where we live. There wasn't a place to go and it was an hour drive. And so we moved to the mountains of Utah. It was in my backyard and like, I'm going to climb all the time. And then after a year, it's like, I hardly climbed this year and I'm definitely not any better than I was the year before. And so again, like I think all your excuses go away and now you've realized you're the same person. And so that's a challenge. And I think people need to realize that and accept that and go in with eyes wide open that you're not going to magically change because you're financially independent or because you retire from a job. Mm-hmm. And along those same lines is like, you have to determine what is next. And there's times where, and even to this day, like I've been 3 years since I left my job of figuring out what is next. What do I really want to do with my time? And so that's, I think, a big challenge. And then the other big challenge my wife and I face, like I mentioned, for most people, getting that partner on board is really hard because people have different backgrounds. For my wife and I, we had very different backgrounds, but our goal was the same. We wanted to build this security. We wanted to build this independence. But then we got to that goal. And all of a sudden, for me, that's what we were shooting for. And I was ready to be done. And for my wife, it was all about that security. And she loved having that high savings rate and it made her feel good. And now like it was terrifying, like the idea of spending down these assets we worked so hard to build, it was terrifying. We were poor college students and we got along great. We were getting out of debt and we got along great. We were just building our careers and we got along great. Now all of a sudden we have more than we've ever had and we're fighting about money all the time. And to the point where it took us sitting down with a marriage counselor to get at what drives us and what motivates us and what makes us tick. And really going deep, and there was a lot of fights and a lot of tears and a lot of time and money spent to figure that out, to get back on the same page. But again, it goes back to that money is going to solve your problems, and that's as old as time. But I think we fell into that trap a bit, that like things will be different when, and they weren't, and they actually got worse for us because we took away what was working for us. And so we had to adjust.
And I've worked with several clients over the years that have been financially independent by any regular sense of the word and have lived. And often they have a struggle with now spending because they've had the habit of save, save. And now all of a sudden it's, wait a minute, now you can go do some of these things. You can spend some of that money and you're not being irresponsible. You're not doing anything bad. You're not going to run out of money and those sorts of things. You're doing it wisely. And yet it's a real mental struggle to be able to go do that because you are changing, you know, your behavior and your habit to something new, which isn't easy.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And it's something we had to work.
So I've got a couple of questions that I like to ask all of my guests. But before I go there, what else, or is there anything else from the idea of y'all's journey or financial independence that you really think it's important for folks to hear?
Yeah, I think we mentioned like how people get so focused on retirement. And so we did reach our goal. And I did, I guess I retired. I left my career as a physical therapist. I haven't worked since, it's been about 3.5 years now as a therapist. But I think, again, I think a lot of people think that this is magically going to be the answer to your problems. And what I like to encourage people to do is just look at the trade-offs. Like, what are the positive things that come from work? So for a lot of people, purpose. A lot of people, connection to other people, just the idea of a paycheck. I think poo the idea and even downplay like it's a bad thing that you're getting your paycheck. And I'll hear people say you're a slave to your paycheck. That's ridiculous. Like a paycheck is how you are able to do things that bring you joy. That's how you can use money to have impact in the world. And so to have a paycheck, that's a positive thing. So what are you going to do when you lose those things, and how are you going to replace them? I think is a really important question. So every decision you make is going to have trade-offs. And that's not to say not to pursue financial independence. Obviously, I'm writing about it and I'm encouraging people to do it. I think it's a great thing. And it's not to say not to retire. Like for me, it was the answer to leave my career. And I think it was a good decision. But for my wife, she works part-time still. And I ended up taking on other things like with the blog and with my book that are bringing in money, and it provide me some of those other things that I lost from being a physical therapist. So I think figuring out what you really want rather than just assuming that retirement is the answer. And then as you start to consider these paths, every path is going to have trade-offs. So ask yourself, if I choose this, what am I giving up? And compare the alternatives, because nothing is without sacrifice or giving things up.
Consider the opportunity cost.
Yep.
At the end of the day, there's always an opportunity cost. Time or money, it doesn't matter. There's always an opportunity cost. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned stewardship earlier, and of course, that's my brand and kind of the lens that I talk about things through. So how would you define stewardship, and what has that impact been on your life and your journey?
Yeah, I think for me, stewardship is just the idea that everything you have is a gift. And I don't know that it's necessarily mine. It's what am I going to do with it to help others and make the world better? And honestly, from just a selfish standpoint, I think probably the things you can do to give you the most joy with your time or with your money is to help other people. There's really nothing that you can do that has comparable return on investment as far as what you can use your money for. And as I mentioned, for us, we've always been pretty good with giving money. What I'm really trying to focus on in this stage in life is now, what do I want to do with my time, and how can I help people? And part of that is the blog and the book and through educating people on a mass scale. But I do miss, like having been a physical therapist, I do miss that one-on-one where you can, when you're writing, you can reach a lot of people, but you're going an inch deep. Whereas if you're one-on-one with people, you're really limited with how many people you can impact, but man, you can go deep and you can really change somebody's life. And so I enjoy the writing aspect, but I'm still thinking, do I want to maybe do some financial coaching? I'm kicking around getting a CFP, and whether I use it or not, I'm kicking around doing that just for my own personal satisfaction starting this fall. So I really want to figure out a way, how can I give of my time along with giving up my money to pay it forward and help other people?
So if I had a magic time machine and I could pick you up and take you 100, 150 years into the future, and you were able to look back on your life, what impact do you hope you've had on the world?
Wow, that's a hard question. That's a great question. I think the first thing that I want to do is just, we mentioned our backgrounds with my parents and all they've done to pour into me. My first goal is to, I want to create a daughter that's going to have positive impact on the world. And so just really pouring into her and starting at home and then just reaching people in my community. I just change the community that we live in to make it a better place. And then through my writing, hopefully I'll free people from that day-to-day grind that most people are stuck in through teaching these simple principles. And it'll be neat to see like how many people will find these principles through my writing and my work, and then what will they do going forward? And that's what really excites me, like on that big picture, you really don't know like what your work can do as things go out exponentially.
So what's coming next for you, Chris, as you continue on this journey and figure out the path that you're living and what your call is and how you're doing things? What's coming next on that?
Yeah. So as we plan, I think looking long term gets really overwhelming. And it's almost kind of nonsense because there's so many things out of your control that you can't control. So what I really focus on is like this next 10-year block. So I just turned 45 years old and I have an 8-year-old daughter. And so the next 10 years, what I really want to do is, again, first and foremost, I want to be a dad. This is the time that she's here. And I know so many people, that time just whizzes by and they look back and they wish they had that time with their kids. As we talk today, actually, we're setting off later this afternoon. We're doing a cross-country trip. We're going to take a whole month off and we're going to just do some sightseeing across the country for about 9 days. We're going to spend about 2 weeks with our family back in Pennsylvania. And then we're going to spend about another 9 taking a different route coming back. And hopefully it'll be a good trip that we remember for the rest of our lives. And being trapped in a van, we won't kill each other.
You'll definitely remember it.
Yes, but stuff like that, just building memories. Again, like now that the world's opening up, so as we're recording this, the whole COVID pandemic is hopefully winding down. And I was starting to get more involved in our local community, and I want to do more of that. And just seeing where I can combine my passions, like one of the things that I'm really excited about that I was starting to do prior to the pandemic and I'm starting to get back into is like adaptive sports. So my background was as a physical therapist, and I mentioned my love for outdoors, climbing, skiing, biking, hiking. And so we have a couple great adaptive programs in the area where I live, and I'm starting to get more involved with those. And then on a bigger scale, again, with my writing, I want to continue to spread this message of financial independence and just seeing where that goes. And that's third priority, because I feel like I have a lot of time to gradually build that out. And it's a hobby business, but I do want to have impact. And so figuring out what's the way to have the most impact is what I would look to figure out over this next decade with that.
You can find out more about Chris over at his website we mentioned earlier, which is caniretireyet.com. You can also find him and follow him on Twitter as @caniretire_yet. Chris, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listener?
No, I would think just depending where you're at in your journey, I really wrote the book for people that were skeptical, that maybe have seen this whole idea of FIRE and they think that you have to be ultra frugal or you have to have a huge income. And what we did is we took a variety of people from this FIRE community and shared their stories, but we broke it down into the principles. So you can take little bits and pieces from different people's stories that apply to you, and then you just throw the rest away and you create your own adventure. So I would love if people would check out the book. And then at the blog, we are more writing to people who are further along down the path and who are contemplating, they're ready to make life changes, but maybe they get hung up because they don't know if they have enough money or they don't know what's next. And so that's really the audience that I write to there. And that's at the blog again, Can I Retire Yet? And for either people, if you want to reach out to me, that's the best place to find me. And I love to connect with readers.
Thanks so much for listening to the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. As a subscriber and listener, we challenge you to not just sit back and passively listen, but act on what you've heard and find a way to live your calling. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor. Go over to inspiredstewardship.com/iTunes rate, all one word, iTunes rate. It'll take you through how to leave a rating and review and how to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you can get every episode as it comes out in your feed. Until next time, invest your time, your talent, and your treasures. Develop your influence and impact the world.